life don't cost any money. It's really clear that the most precious resource we all have is time. As it is, I pay a price by not having much of a personal life. I don't have the time to pursue love affairs or to tour small towns in Italy and sit in cafes and eat tomato and mozzarella salad. Occasionally, I spend a little money to save myself the hassle of wasting time, which means I spend a little money to save time. And that's the extent of it. I bought an apartment in New York because I like New York. But, you know, there are many people at Apple, so you can work out who it is, who can buy everything that they could ever possibly want and still have most of their money unspent. I hate talking about this as a problem. People are going to read this and think, yeah, well, give me your problem. They're going to think I'm an arrogant little asshole. You did say record it.
Yeah.
That was Steve Jobs. And I suppose one of the critical things, one of the things which just reverberates amongst all of you who are either professionals or entrepreneurs or a bit of both, is, and the thing that I know and I'm sure you all know, is if it's about the money, you're just not going to succeed. If it is because, or you might succeed for a very short space of time, but it will just will not last. That's one of the themes I'm going to pick up on. And it's one of the ironies, it's one of the great ironies, that if you're doing it for the money, you don't end up succeeding. And I'll show you, I'll give you lots of examples. If you end up doing it for the passion of the thing that you enjoy the most, and that's the trick, trying to find out what you're passionate about as opposed to being on a conveyor belt. And I'll try and make sure that that's the most trite statement I make, because I want to try and tell you things you don't already know. But what you tend to find out is, if you try and find the passion of what you enjoy, and I end up spending probably about 90% of my time trying to advise people, sometimes not so well, I'm sure, but email back and forth, on how to find that thing which is going to drive and motivate them. We live in an age where we no longer look for the 9-to-5 job, as we all know. We look for purpose. Suddenly we find ourselves with this terrible first world problem of finding meaning and purpose in our lives instead of just being lawyers. I used to be a barrister. There's some lawyers. God save your souls, but there's some lawyers in this room. And you're looking for purpose. I mean, presumably if you're a human rights lawyer, you're not. But if like, you're a corporate lawyer, you probably are. If you're not, you probably haven't got a soul. But most of us are looking for something beyond ourselves. Something happened maybe in the 80s or in the late 70s and in the 90s where we don't just simply want to any longer be doing the job, earning money, putting food on the table. We seem to want more. And then the 2.2 children and everything else, all of which were magnificent things to have, incredibly difficult things to have, but we seem to want to improve the world without necessarily going into full-time politics, because that too will not necessarily be fulfilling and not be purposeful. So how do we do that if we're selling, as Steve Jobs famously said when he was looking for a CEO, to the head of Pepsi, if all you're doing is selling coloured fizzy water for the rest of your life? How's that going to be purposeful? How the hell do you make a company which sells this stuff into a life's mission? How does somebody, as entrepreneurs, how are you going to convert selling pieces of metal and plastic into, wow, isn't that an amazing company to work for, or Google? How the hell did they manage to get that to be exciting when actually when you think about it, metal and a phone company? If I said to you 20 years ago, do you want to work for a telecoms company? Are you kidding? I want to be a lawyer. Of course I do. And what he said to the guy is, we're not making phones. And every company, every entrepreneur on day one when they start this, the passion they find is not, I'm going to be the world's richest man and create the world's largest company. Of course they don't. They might, in their wildest dreams, think that. But what they're probably doing is turning it entirely around into, as Steve Jobs eventually did, into, how am I changing the world? Or in the case of Bill Gates, I'll make lots of money, but then I will save the world. God bless Bill Gates. He goes out and gives, through the Gates Foundation, so much money to try and eradicate malaria. Who would have thought that crappy piece of software that I spent 5 hours a day kicking my PC with, that including today, would actually go and save lives in it? The only reason I stopped kicking my PC, by the way, is because at least it's saving some kids somewhere. But how the heck do you turn software and this into a passionate dream, not just for yourself, so you wake up and think, oh God, please let this hollow feeling inside of my worthlessness go. You lot don't have it. You're not as old as me, but when you're as old as me, you might get it, unless you find that purpose, that most of us increasingly, as we realize our days are numbered, start looking for. You don't tend to look for it in your 20s, you think, I'm going to live forever, I'm going to get it. In your 30s, it dawns on you now and again, and in your 40s you start thinking, how the hell did I end up here? They call it a midlife crisis and so on. So he changed his perspective. He said, well, we're trying to make people's lives happier. And you're all happy when you're using this. Most of the time you're happy, it works, and you're happy using this. But more extraordinary, for a business to become the world's largest company, he turned it around into convincing other people that they were doing it. So they were willing to work 3 nights on the trot and be happy about it and brag about it. They would kill themselves for this company. He changed it into an evangelical mission, which is what your individual company is. You're in business, you've got X number of employees. Some of you, I think, mentioned earlier, you've only got, say, 3 employees, whatever it is. Actually, the first person you've got to evangelize to is yourself. Because if you just say, I'm going to be rich, as we all know, it's just not going to be motivating enough. It is when you're 16, 17, 18, and you're becoming a lawyer. It just doesn't get being motivating enough long enough, especially if you're trying to build that company up, because everybody else needs to have that spirit. But worst of all, as I say, is when they did this survey in a nursing home and asked people, what do you regret? And you might have heard of this. What do you regret the most in your life? It was the things they didn't do. And if this company or whatever else you're going to devote your time to is not something that you totally believe in, and it can be something as, well, pointless in one regard, as a phone, whatever it is, we're able to change somebody's life and make them happier and better for it, then whether it's social enterprise or, in my view, as all businesses, in a way, social enterprise. And the reason I say that is Oskar Schindler, and you may remember from the film, said at the end of it, I wish I'd made more money. A businessman said, I wish I'd made more money. He said, I wish I made more money because I would have saved more lives. That's what business does. It doesn't take a world war to save lives. It doesn't take extermination of the Jewish race to save lives. He wished he'd made more money. That was what he was good at. He wasn't a soldier. He wasn't a priest. He was a businessman. And his biggest regret was he didn't make more money. He didn't work harder. He didn't piss it all away. He's bigger, and this is true. I'm not even making this up. This is not a piece of fiction. It's not a piece of drama. He wished that was his destiny in life, was to be a businessman. That was his calling. Once it was his calling, he wished it, not for himself so he could have the flash house and all the rest of it. I assure you, I know a lot of rich people, and they are assholes on the whole. The ones who have given it away or don't have the money because they've built it and spent it tend to be actually the most decent people and the people you want the planet filled up with. He wished he'd made more money. When India had independence, the Birlas used to say to Mahatma Gandhi, keeping you in poverty is a very expensive business. The Birlas were a business, are a business family. They kept him in poverty in the sense that they were funding. It took business to create the largest democracy known to man, to free the largest group of individuals in one single go since the history of time, to start the demolition of the largest empire ever known to man. It took business. It was business. It wasn't just freedom fighters. It took a number of barristers educated in Britain, and it took business. It wasn't going to happen without business. This is not to elevate business into something which it is not. It is simply to say, often our perspectives in business and the vacuum that we get filled up with, or rather hollows us out, is that we don't see the bigger purpose of what we're doing. And if we can find bigger purpose in this, which really is nothing, I mean, it's metal and plastic. I mean, it's a fantastic piece of technology with about 5,000 Samsung patents in it, but it is pretty much nothing. I mean, if you said to your parents, I'm going to make telephones. If this has purpose, just imagine the other things. Whatever it is you're doing, you've probably not even realized the bigger purpose it could have. Now, you're going to need this purpose. You're going to need this purpose because if you're going to become entrepreneurs, or you already are, and you've not already had the 4 a.m., the feeling of the vomit at the back of the throat, I apologize for those who are drinking and you might have to apologize. Because I've had it. And if you've not had it, if you've not had that, then your dream isn't big enough, because your fear isn't big enough, and then you're just coasting in your comfort zone, and that's fine. Hey, be in your comfort zone, and that's fine. But you're probably not going to do anything fantastic or push yourselves, which is the worst thing of all. If you don't push yourselves, then you're just taking somebody else's place. When I was at Oxford, my tutor, my politics tutor said to me, he said, 90% of the people at this university are mediocre. They're not going to do anything with their lives other than push paper. Another lecturer said, whatever you do, do not go into the system, do not just push paper. Sadly, as we've seen with banking, it's what most people end up doing. I'll come back to bankers later, I'm not going to bash them actually. And the point of it was, is you're taking somebody else's place. They used to pay the tutors when the student who turned up at those university places were late or didn't put everything into it. You are taking up somebody else's place. Somebody from Vietnam, somebody from India, somebody who would have given their right arm for it. These are things you know because these are things your parents have told you. If you've got children, it's probably the things you tell your children. But because you're taking up somebody else's place, if you go into business and you don't give it everything, and you don't give it everything to the point where you're feeling sick at 4 in the morning, that's fine. You're just walking and you're trotting along. You'll be one of those 99% of people, as I probably will end up being as well, despite my best efforts, who will have been on this planet and nobody will care and it won't matter. But I was at a charity function 2 days ago I was hosting, and I recounted a quote from Emerson, which was, success is that somebody has breathed a little easier because you lived. Business can do that on a massive scale. We don't think of business like that. We think of it as, how can I get the Ferrari and the car and all the rest of it? When you get those things, it is so hollow. It's the reason why rich people commit suicide. It doesn't actually mean anything. And you're saying, yes, I know, but what a wonderful problem to have, as Steve Jobs said. That feature of success, if you can plan that now instead of 20 years from now, your journey will be so much more enjoyable. If you are really pushing yourself to the point where, like me, 4 in the morning, you're on your knees, not because you're defeated, but because you're praying that something turns around, then at least you'll know that every aspect of it is worthwhile. And whether win or lose, you'll have given it your all. Let me, because I've made some notes, let me give you in a particularly scatological manner, which I've already begun, some of these issues. First of all, I don't know why you've asked me to speak here, because I used to clean toilets, so you're taking entrepreneurial advice from a former toilet cleaner. But I love you all for it, because, you know, next time I'm going to sell you double glazing, because if you're willing to buy what I'm telling you when I was cleaning toilets. But I was the best toilet cleaner you would ever have met. And I can tell you, if any of you ever need to know how to remove lipstick from women's toilets, it's far more difficult than urine from men's toilets, by the way. I'll tell you how it's done later on and exactly, you know, what the trick is. The point is, I didn't have a silver spoon. I sometimes, I think because of the way I look, come across as arrogant, but Steve Jobs said I'm really not. I have so much to be humble about, my physique being one thing. Let me tell you what the entrepreneurial journey started off from. I was one of the co-founders of something called Time in the UK, the Indus Entrepreneurs. We have 44 chapters around the world. The Silicon Valley chapter was formed by the founder of Hotmail, Sudhir Bhatia, and founder of Sun Microsystems, Vinod Khosla. I, together with a few other entrepreneurs, set up the UK chapter. We have all these chapters around the world, so if you're entrepreneurs, join Time in the UK. I think it's free membership anyway. That's a networking organization. It was all voluntary, and it was to help other people in their businesses. 90% of our time was spent telling people that it was a really bad idea they had. 90% of the time was spent doing that because they were really bad ideas, and I, like what the rest of you will have, 90% of my ideas will be really bad, and that's fine. That's what we did. You mentioned the dealmaker role. As a role with the British government, most of the things in my life have come along because I'm Forrest Gump's twin brother. They've been purely by accident. The dealmaker role with the UK government is I get to look for technologies and entrepreneurs of outstanding capabilities and of strategic importance to the United Kingdom from India, Malaysia, southern China, and Singapore, and get to bring them to the United Kingdom. So they might be in cybersecurity, they might be in nanotechnology, they could be in all sorts of things. I was asked to do this because of other various entrepreneurial things that I did. You've already mentioned author. I get to look at probably about 100 to 200 business plans a year in the private equity side of my business. We invest in one or two of those. On the hedge fund side, I get to evaluate companies. Recently, I was doing the money program just before the Facebook IPO and did the discount cash flow on it and said this is going to halve in price. So it's one of those moments again where my reputation would already have been already in tatters, would have been even more so. in tatters, and I said, the share price will halve if anybody has seen it. They'll know that it's halved. So all this talking about finance can actually make you money because you can short the crap out of stocks like that. And for me, I suppose to one extent, my profession is when it comes to finance, is to make sure I can explain it more clearly than anybody else, my particular area of finance, and globally. So today, there were about 3 TV slots. Tomorrow morning, I'm doing a newspaper review, which goes out to about 75 million people, but that's my job, to make sure I can explain finance as clearly as possible to a larger audience as possible. We all have our little 60-second thing of what it is that we're supposed to be good at. What is our destiny? What is our purpose in life? There's an old saying that the two most important days in your life are the day you're born and the day you find out why. And if we're looking for purpose in business, beyond what I've already said, it's probably to work out what that destiny thing is. Most people don't bother thinking about that. They think about P&Ls and balance sheets and cash flows, and that's fine. But trust me, one day you'll wake up and think, crap, I could have done so much more. And that's the worst feeling. And I know amazing business people who thought about that. What more could I do? How can this be bigger and bigger and bigger? Because we're all scared senseless, not of failure. Trust me, we're not afraid of failure. We're far more afraid of success. We're afraid of the attention success brings. We're afraid of the responsibilities success brings. We're afraid of the fact we have to keep on repeating what success means. Subconsciously, deep down, in the darkest places, you are far more afraid of success than you ever are of failure. And the way, to some extent, to avoid that is actually just think of a bigger and bigger and bigger motivating dream such that it becomes your destiny to do something beyond what it is you're doing so that you're no longer afraid of the success, you need it. Now, I'll tell you what my version of that is. You guys are going to have to find out what it is for each of you. Some of you will already know it. I hope what I'm saying is not, as I say, trite, but it's the most important things that I've learned. I grew up in a small town called Armley up in Leeds. So I just wanted to get across that there was no, sadly, there was no silver spoon. There never has been a silver spoon. However, one of the things that I've been very fortunate with is a stupid sense of my abilities and an overconfidence. One of the things that I learned early on when I wrote a book about women entrepreneurs is women are fantastic because from the research I found in the book and the research which has been done academically is so often they will compete against themselves well before men get in the room. Let me explain that. Time and time again, academic research has shown, as well as anecdotal evidence, that on the whole, there are exceptions, that women will not tend to be as overconfident as men are about their abilities, and that men will get away with charging more for doing less than women will. Experiments have been done in universities where they ask a man and a woman to do the same amount of work and then price it. The man tends to price it more than the woman. Either he's overconfident or it's just a bullshit, whatever it is, they tend to get away with it. So when I wrote this book, and Halifax Bank of Scotland sponsored it, one of the things I discovered, sadly, was that this was the case. That actually, there's a lack of confidence amongst half the population. As a generality, it comes up time and again. It's not anecdotal evidence, this is research done out of universities, and I collated and we found it, and the idea with the book was, okay, well, how do we get around that? How do we avoid that problem? I'm giving a talk next Wednesday to an organisation called Women Empowered, where I'm a male champion, to advise them how we overcome that problem with young women. But it was great if you're a bloke in business, because it generally tended to mean, and around the boardroom table with sharp elbows and a few little tricks, of course the same tricks you try with men, but you'd have less chance of getting away with them. I'm speaking of generalities, but I've got academic evidence of it, is you'd get away with more. That made business a little bit easier in certain areas. In finance, there were largely men anyway, so it didn't make much of a difference. As a result of that, I've spent a lot more time and energy on working with women's groups because being a lawyer, there was a sense of justice, injustice, and it was always easy to find purpose in something where there's an injustice for all of us. If you're looking for a purpose, find something where there's an injustice, it's a lot easier. And that was an injustice, that people with merit weren't getting ahead. Several purposes came about through business, not just, as I said, with the old Oscar Schindler quote that if I made more money, I could have saved more lives. But more and more, as you progress with business, even when you're not profitable, the whole aim of it is one day you'll be profitable and make stupid amounts of money, far more money, as Steve Jobs said, than you could ever spend. And what are you going to do with it? And more you end up, hopefully, you'll be the type of person whose purpose was to do something beyond yourself. And there are a few people who will have that vision to say, right, the reason I'm doing this is for my family, or I'm doing it for certain causes which resonate. Find them. And please don't say there's not enough time in the day. I'm not going to make a speech about charitable giving and all the rest of it, because I'm sure you all do all of that. But the amount to which that's linked into business, not as something as an add-on, just as, oh yeah, we do this and then we do this and tick it on. If you can integrate it into the purpose of business, your business becomes so much easier to do, because you are there because that is your destiny. Your destiny wasn't to make phones. If you read the quotes of Steve Jobs, they change from, we're going to make the simplest telephones to use, which is where most people's businesses will start. Your business will start with, I'm going to make the best barter website. That's where you start off with. Of course you do. Or the easiest software to use. It moved from that, if you read the later speeches, it moves into, we are trying to make people's lives happier and easier, make them easier to stay in touch with other people. Now, when O2 do it, you know, they can't fulfill on the promise, you don't believe it. The reason for us to want to do it from day one in the business we're in is because it'll get you through all the difficult, the horrible times, and those horrible times will occur. Again, that's tried. I'm not going to talk too much about that. I will talk about a bit about why we got funded. I wish I'd known that earlier. Quickly, from the notes I made earlier, the things that I wish I'd known, and some of the things I'm glad I did know, which worked. There isn't a secret to success, but if there was, public speaking is it. Because instead of networking individually, you get to network with about 30 people, advertise yourself, and find out. And it's far more cost-effective, time-efficient than any other way. For me, my job... I used to be the shyest boy in school. So for anybody who says, oh, I can't really public speak bullshit, I don't think I started talking to girls until I was 16, so I didn't get to work with separate issue. Until I was about 16. Public speaking, if there was a secret, to try and get to do that, develop expertise. Again, things you probably know, but sometimes the things we know, we don't realise just how important they are, and especially if we're afraid of them. Learn it in the way you do any other skill. It is not just whether it's that or writing. In my case, I was told I had a problem with English, which is why I went on to write for the Financial Times, which you might think all their journalists have a problem with English. But the point with it is go well beyond what you think gets you to being good at something. There's this phrase, there's a whole game going on out there that you're not even aware of, and it is this, that you think to get a gig, it takes X, Y, Z. You see the thing directly, and you think, oh, all I have to do to succeed is ABC, and that's what I see. It's usually 10 times more than that. For me to get one place as a barrister, one offer, I had to send out 100 applications. So today when I get people saying to me, I've sent out 20 job applications, can't find anything, I normally tell them to go away until they've really tried. There's a whole lot of things going on you're just not aware of. I'm trying to work out what the real game is. And if it's something like trying to excel at public speaking or writing, because again, those two things will get you ahead. So there's not a secret to success, but those things really do help. For some reason, if you're on television, and I was just lucky, I wrote a book and that got on, and then it's just been snowballing ever since. But the old Muhammad Ali quote, I run on the rope long before I dance under the lights. People have no idea the number of hours that go in to making sure that you're going to be on again and again and again and again because you're that good. And why are you that good? Because you have gone through every single word, nuance, tone, intonation, analysed it down to the nth degree, and you've read every single damn book you can get your hands on the subject. And I used to write for the FT, it was 700 words. Every single word with this finger, I would go under, and I would look to make sure there's a connection with the next word and the preceding word, and that the rhythm of every sentence worked with the rhythm of the subsequent sentence, and every paragraph was connected to the next one. With this bloody finger, every single sodding word, it used to take 24 hours. There is a game going on you have no idea about if you want to get to where you want to be. And it's not easy. And you never get told about it. I wish I'd known that earlier. Well, I sort of picked it up pretty quickly, luckily, about that. Make public promises. Psychology is fantastic. If you make public promises, the embarrassment, the humiliation of breaking them. There was an experiment done in the US with a TV program where they took a group of men and women and they said, if you don't lose X number of kilos, you will be put on television in 6 months in your shorts or bikinis or whatever. One group wouldn't be put on, another one would be put on TV. Guess which one lost the weight? The one which were going to be publicly humiliated. Making those public promises, you might think, well, this is extreme. It just depends how badly you want it. If you don't, and I'm assuming everybody, they're willing to give up an evening to spend time with me, they must really want things badly. But public promises do make a difference, because you have to live by your word and you have to hold your head up in society and all those things. And that was one of the things which has been pretty critical for me. One of the things which I realized, wish I'd realized earlier, is no matter how good contracts are, no matter how rich the other person is who comes to you, do not get into bed with people you do not trust. If you do not have a good gut instinct with them, do not get into bed with those people, because no contract will be good enough to get you out of it, and you won't have the legal fees in any event. No amount of lost sleep because you think the other person is trying to stab you or is going to take the company from you or whatever. Do not get into bed with people you don't trust. I'm talking about business as well as life, of course, but business in particular. Tom Singh, the founder of New Look, who was a mentor of mine for a while, advised me, always hire people cleverer than yourself. You'd be surprised at how unclever, in the traditional sense, business people are. Very wealthy, successful business people are. They're sometimes very good at doing the same thing over and over again. And actually, they spend a hell of a lot of time just thinking about that particular issue, whereas people with high IQs might think about philosophy and problems of society in general. They might think about their business because maybe they're not as clever traditionally, but they're very good at business. Tom said, I just hired a lot of people who are cleverer than me. And now I try and look for people, which are pretty easy, who are cleverer than me, to do things. I realised pretty soon on, and I came to terms with it, that I'm not brilliant at everything. I have a friend who set up a hedge fund and a brokerage company and went from zero to now having private jets. I realised I can do that. Soon you realise what you're strong at and what you're not, and where you need to fill those gaps in your honesty, your weaknesses. Men tend to be, again, research from the book, tend to be less honest with their weaknesses, and this might come as no surprise to some people in this room, than women do. Men tend less to be able to say, I've got a real problem here. Whenever I've asked business friends and colleagues, I can't do this, this is too difficult, they've loved it. They've loved to help. It's been fantastic. The biggest advances have been whenever I've said to people, can you help me with X, Y, Z? Intellectual property. Own intellectual property. If you look at a map of the world, there's a direct correlation between the wealth of nations and the amount of patents that that nation produces. There is no joke when I say that Samsung and Apple were fighting over patents worth hundreds of millions just simply because they were properties, because wealth is dependent upon it. Ever since we've not been able to invade countries to acquire wealth and through theft and force alone, on the whole, we've had to rely on intellectual property, which is great because it means we don't need to command armies anymore, because looking around the room doesn't look like anybody's going to be a general here anytime soon. So that's good. Intellectual property doesn't necessarily need to be a patent. That's what I look for the British government. I go meet the top scientists in India and China. The government is doing it, and they're sending somebody out. We'll be in Moscow next week. They're sending somebody out to acquire intellectual property to bring to the United Kingdom, because the future wealth of this country depends upon two things: intellectual property and the entrepreneurs who can do something with it. the country has enough capital, those are the three things you need for success, it has enough capital, but it is the entrepreneurs, so we're bringing them in from abroad, we're shipping them in, because we only have an island of 60 million people. Despite what you hear from the Home Office and immigration problems and all the rest of it, we need more entrepreneurs, and we need more intellectual property. Without intellectual property, you don't have the right to income, and it's far better to be a licensor, a property owner and a landlord, earning rent off that intellectual property than be a licensee of it, because anybody will tell you, a licensee can sell some, you've got rights to distribution, you're a shopkeeper, you sell somebody else's goods and products, that's fine, but you won't really make serious money until it's your intellectual property. We within the hedge fund, I create algorithms, trading algorithms. They're owned by me. Somebody comes along to me every week, people come along, they say, oh, I've got this trading algorithm that produces 20% a year. I don't care. I'd rather own something which produces 15% a year and earn 100% of it than something which produces 20% a year and give you half of it. Why would I do that? Find the areas where you can own the intellectual property. That'll push your business a little bit further. If you don't want to be that far ahead in business in terms of taking that much risk, franchises are fantastic. You've heard this, I'm sure, a million times before, because 90% of franchises are still in business 3 years later, whereas 90% of business startups, non-franchise startups, are out of business 3 years later. So, intellectual property and own the patents. I wish I could understand my notes. Big and bold. I wish I'd thought of bigger and bolder things sooner. Donald Trump, in a book called The Art of the Deal, before all these books became about his hair, wrote, I'm going to have quite a few lawsuits, actually, aren't I, for slander. Fantastic. Bring it on, Don. Said that it takes just as much effort, this isn't 24 hours in a day, it takes just as much effort to run a big hotel as it does a small one, except people were afraid, his words, people were afraid of success, that they didn't go for the small one. They didn't go for the big one, they go for the small one, so he picked up the bigger properties cheaper. He's just, you can see the chutzpah of thinking bigger anyway. It's not thought alone, but most of us are too afraid to think in terms of size and scale. I went to Corfu last weekend to the christening of a friend's son, and he's Greek, and I gave him three pieces of advice, all three from Diogenes. So I gave him three pieces of advice from his Greek forefathers. The first one is, Diogenes said, I am not a citizen of Greece, I am a citizen of the world. Business allows us now to be global. Whatever you're doing, I see so many business plans, and it's really unfortunate. See, so many business plans which are so specific to a particular country, and they won't be able to scale up. And that's fine to an extent if that's the sum total of your ambition. But if you can sell it around the entire planet, even better. The second piece of advice I gave him, again from Diogenes, was I saw a child, I threw away my cup because I saw a child drink water with his hands from a trough. And the idea there, my point to him there was, first one was think about the whole world. The second one was do not take too much from the world, but give to the world instead. And that was the social entrepreneurship part. And the final one to him was, it is the privilege of the gods, again, Diogenes, it is the privilege of the gods to want for nothing. But it is the duty of godlike men and women to want for very little. And the point of that was take from the world as little as possible. The Steve Jobs thing. The less you can live on, and I've learned this through divorces, the less you can live on, the happier you will be. But in all seriousness, I kid you not, so many people I know who are starting out in business thinking it's about the money, thinking about what. I've rarely met people who've actually just been happy because of the money part, it's been because of the other bits. I say to you, I might be completely wrong with you, and you might say, well, who are you to tell us this part anyway? But it is my experiences of some of the very wealthy people that I meet through my business, because we manage money for rich people. Well, our job is to make rich people richer, and hopefully they give it away for good causes. But my other job with the social work is to make sure I take money out of rich people's pockets and redistribute it. Just as a side issue, the former speechwriter for Al Gore wrote a book called Drive. His name's Daniel Pink. Has anybody read Drive? You've read Drive. Fantastic book. three things which are going to motivate you. This has been tested on animals, children, so monkeys, children, and humans. And this is really important if you're going to go into business and whatever it is you're going to do. And a series of experiments been done through the 60s, 70s, 80s, and he collected all of this. And what he found, the most motivating, fulfilling thing for people in jobs was this. They gave children a task to do which they enjoyed, colouring in. Then they gave them a reward for colouring in within the lines. The children, the quality of the work diminished. They gave monkeys a small job, little monkeys, a small job, maybe putting a ball in a hat. Then they gave them a reward for doing the same activity of an art. Their motivation to do it, the time in which they did it, their desire to do it, diminished. They gave adults, and in the time of the Ford Motor Company, you paid adults more, they produced more. Because it was a pretty, we used to do menial jobs, you know, just pay me more, and yeah, okay, I'll bash the car a bit harder, and I'll cut more stones and more bricks and all the rest of it. But now we live in a creative world, creative industry, creative world. What motivates us now? I mention this because the people that I speak to, the high-flying lawyers, the ones who've made partner, the accountants, the bankers, they're all freaking depressed. I mean, bankers you can understand, but lawyers, the professionals, people I've known from the age of 18, and business people, whatever it is they're doing. What was discovered that motivated people, surprisingly, wasn't actually the money. There were three things that all these things had in common. And the way they discovered it was this. Google, as you might know, gives, I think it's 20% time, free time. Do whatever you want. People thought, well, they'll just goof off. They'll just, you know, go and have a beer or whatever. People don't do that. If they're qualified and they're creative, they tend not to do that. They tend to do their own little project. In that 20% time is when Gmail was invented. It was invented in that Orkut was invented, which I think is used more in places like India than it is in the West, but through Google that was invented. To the extent that Amazon bought an online shoe retailer, put people on probation, new hires on probation for 6 months, and then paid them to leave. Whoever took the money and left were exactly the kind of people they didn't want, because they were in it for the money. They wanted people who wanted to do it, wanted to be at the job. You've heard the phrase from Olympians or whoever else, people at the top of their game, I would do this even without the money. And the reason is they love the job. If you can find, and I can't give you the answer to what it is for each one of you, but if you can find that thing that you love, then the money just comes easily because the quality of the product and the value and the hours you put in, everything just follows. The main problem we all tend to have is we haven't found the thing that we love. And there is no easy answer to that other than a hell of a lot of time thinking. We haven't found the thing that we love, so we take the next best thing. We settle. We make ourselves suitable for something completely unsuitable to us. So instead, they got rid of these stuff. They found the three things you need is an activity with skill, well, presumably an entrepreneurship, you're going to do that. Something with a degree of autonomy. We hate to be told, do this, do that. Who loves people telling us, people telling a rush up? And purpose. The best companies are very good at convincing you they're not just selling sugared water, sugared coloured water, but look at the Coca-Cola advert. I want to make the world a happier place. And I buy it. I bought into that whole dream thing. And with Apple, I buy Apple. I think to myself, I'm going to be a happier person. If you can think in those terms. Now, my destiny is whatever it is. I've found, a purpose. And that makes it so much easier. And when you look at the most successful business people, of which I'm not one, when you look at them, you find that they found the purpose. They can go that extra mile. They can do that bit more. Such that, there's a Will Smith quote, I think I might have given in one of the interviews. You will not outwork me. You and me, on a treadmill, one of two things will happen. Either you get off first or I die. Because you love the stuff you're doing so well. If you can't do it, you're going to get outcompeted. If you don't have the confidence, for whatever physiological, whatever other reasons, you're going to get outcompeted. You're going to actually be wasting your time. You're going to lose. And that's why 90% of businesses lose. I will, in the networking thing, tell you about why angels invest and they don't and all the other things specifically. I hope what I've described wasn't some of it at least, used to hope. 1% of it was new and novel and something which will be of use and of value to you. I will check to make sure there's anybody else I should slander, libel, get a lawsuit from, and make sure I'm just generally never invited to your house again. Then, no, I think I pretty much covered everyone. Yeah, no, I'm just going to go for the Pope. No, I'll leave him out. That's it. I hope it was value well spent. And if not, from listening to me, at least you've got each other to network with this evening. So thank you. Thank you all.